The inside line from Aidan O'Brien on the Derby and Constitution River Hokey Cokey. Another hole in British racing. Disrupt the action at Haydock. And finally, is Darris unbeatable or will he be beaten at Royal Ascot? All that and more on today's The Front Page. Hello there and welcome along to this edition of The Front Page. It's Bank Holiday Monday and I'm your host, Maddie Pleil, for today's show. I'm joined in the studio by Chris Cook. Great to have you here, Chris. And also David Jennings from Ireland is joining us on the line as well. And it's a good job because we have all the fallout from the Irish 2,000 and 1,000 guineas over the weekend. We've also got some Derby hokey cokey that we're going to be getting into, as well as the latest news on affordability checks, equine flu, and the hole that sunk Haydock's card on Saturday, or at least some of it. So without further ado, let's get into the show. And first up, we've got to talk about confusion in the Epsom Derby market. Yesterday, on Sunday, we had Constitution River. He was suddenly made the 5-2 favourite from 9-2 for the race. He was 5-1 from 6-4 for the Prix de Jockey Club. And the whispers were that the Epsom decision had been made. This horse, who is the talk of Ballydore, seemingly the best of their crop. A decision had been made over his classic target, but then Aidan O'Brien came out and said that, as far as he was aware anyway, wasn't the plan. Breaking news with the Prix de Jockey Club entries this morning is that Benvenuto Cellini isn't among them, so that's clearly going to impact that market. Now, as we look at things, Benvenuto Cellini, the Chester Vars winner, has been reinstated as the 3-1 favourite. Constitution River 7-2. In some areas, they're sharing a price. 9-2 item, 10 Maltese Cross, 12 Pierre Bernard, 14 James J. Braddock, 16 Montreal and Bay of Brilliance. David Jennings, you spoke to Aidan O'Brien yesterday. What did you learn? What have you made of this whole escapade?
Yeah, I suppose it's the one thing that seems to properly infuriate punters and the public is not knowing specific targets for specific horses. But in fairness to Aidan O'Brien, I've dealt with him now for the guts of 20 years, and he is pretty good at giving the right information and saying where he thinks horses are going and doing it quite well in advance. I think if you look back through the years, he is quite good at it. And I spoke to him yesterday. I said, look, Aidan, there's been a big move for Constitution River for the Epsom Derby. I said, actually, there's been a big move for Constitution River for the Derby, I said, Aidan. And he goes, what Derby? That was the first thing he said was, what Derby? And I said, well, there's only supposed to be one Derby, the Epsom one. And he goes, oh, really? He goes, well, basically, the last five, when I spoke to the lads, was that he was going to France. And he said, basically, to me, that at that time, which was Sunday, probably about 5-2 or so, that the plan was for Constitution River to go to France along with Hawk Mountain and Montreal, and that the Epsom team would consist of Benvenuto Cellini, Pierre Bonnard, and Action, with potentially one or two others as well. So that was yesterday. He said, look, I don't know if the lads have been chatting since I was chatting to them, and maybe they've changed their mind, but I just get the impression from Aidan that unless something changes, and things do change, like it infuriates me sometimes when you see on Twitter or X, as it's called now, people, you know, absolutely lambasting trainers for saying, oh, you said this horse was going here and then it's going here. Like, things change. Like, it's like picking a football team. The team that you pick on a Monday for a game might change by the time Saturday comes along because of training sessions or what happens behind the scenes. We don't know. And I'd say it was a similar story actually going. We'll speak about it later. The 1,000 guineas, I spoke to Aidan on the Tuesday, and he said True Love and Precise were running. And at that stage, they were kind of 7-4 giant favourites. And I got the distinct impression from Aidan that Ryan would probably run Precise. Now, it was only me guessing from my involvement with him over the years, but I just got the impression from what he was saying that that form could be turned around potentially just in my head. And then obviously maybe they worked or something, and Ryan obviously chose True Love. So I think things do change in the build-up to these big races, what they're doing, their last kind of final big bits of work. But from 5-2 on Sunday, it was definitely the case that Constitution River was going to Shanty.
And speaking to Aidan at the various press days we've had recently, do you agree that the vibes around Constitution River are that he is the outstanding three-year-old candidate for this season at the minute?
I'd say he's the fastest anyway. I'd say he's definitely faster than Benvenuto Cellini. And there was just like, the reaction to the two performances at Chester I caught at the time were quite bizarre, because I watched the two of them, Benvenuto and Constitution River, and in my opinion, there was no comparison between the two performances. The Constitution River visually was the most impressive. The way, like, he was like an ultimate trap bone greyhound at a dog track, the way he railed at Chester. It was like he just looked like the finished article. It looked like nothing would bother him. He was just so complete and professional, and did everything exactly the way you want to do it. And I even thought the way Ryan spoke about the two colts afterwards suggested to me that he thought the Constitution River was the most talented of them. But the most talented horse doesn't always win the Derby at Epsom. It is, you go back to High Chaparral and Hawkwing, and this is a similar type of situation. Obviously, those two horses have a long way to go before being spoken about like those two. But I just think Constitution River is probably your Hawkwing, as in serious talent, whereas Benvenuto Cellini is your battle-hardened stayer almost that you know is going to get the trip. So I'd say that's why Constitution River is going to go to France and potentially then go to the Eclipse. And I would say it will be Benvenuto Cellini to go to Epsom, because we know he's going to get the trip.
If you had your way, would you like to see Constitution River at Epsom though?
Yeah, I think he'd win the Derby. Yeah, I think you obviously do need to stay, but I think this year especially, I think he might just get away with just about maybe getting the trip. And they can put their various parts in the race to ensure what sort of pace is in the race. And I think on raw ability, it'd be interesting to see what Chris thinks and yourself, Maddie. I think on raw ability, I think, like, if you put the two of them in a match race over a mile and two or a mile and a half, I'd be pretty sure the Constitution River would win each of those races. A mile and a half with a proper pacemaker turning it into a proper test, I wouldn't be 100% sure whether Constitution River would beat Benvenuto Cellini. And that's what I think potentially could happen. If it is a proper test, I'd say they're worried about just stamina for Constitution River. And that's why they're going to France. And it opens up so many doors as well for Constitution River. If he does go to France, it's that pace angle and the Eclipse and, you know, Judmont Internationals and Delacroix route for Constitution River. Because I do think he is in that kind of Delacroix category. I think he is that good. I think he is probably going to be their flagship horse this season. So it's going to be fascinating.
It will be really interesting to find out. Chris, you and I were talking beforehand about sort of Coolmore being in the business of creating stallions, and therefore the shorter trip of the Prix de Jockey Club is going to be more attractive to them. Okay, I appreciate Wooten Bassett has had some stayers, and I know Constitution River has the likes of Wonderful Tonight, Heartache Tonight, who were top mile and a half performers in his pedigree. But when he shows as much speed as he does, I think you're asking more of him to stay the mile and a half at Epsom than you are to win the Prix de Jockey Club. You were laughing as DJ was talking then. Tell us why.
No, I would never laugh. When DJ is talking, I just listen attentively.
You're on your own there, Chris.
I hope to learn something. But no, it was just when you compare Constitution River to Hawkwing. I mean, I have mixed memories of Hawkwing. It was all great fun. But, you know, I have hope that Constitution River might end up with a stronger reputation than he had. So there's two thoughts really about the market move on Sunday there. It probably doesn't take, well, it definitely doesn't take as much money to make a significant seeming move like that than it would have done 10, 15, 20 years ago. That's one thought. So, I mean, your instinct when you see Constitution River shortening for the Derby across the board is, you know, oh my God, something's been decided. But, it might just be one person or a group of people have got it into their heads that actually this is a good price and they should be getting involved. It might have been triggered by Golden Story winning Saturday, who'd been absolutely gubbed by Constitution River at Chester. You know, maybe people were looking at that and thinking, you know, this is a really serious bit of form. This is a serious horse. Surely to God, they're going to run him in the Derby. And that's my follow-up point is that I think there's still an instinctive feel that, you know, when you get a really talented three-year-old like him, he's just bound to go for the Derby. But as you say, Coolmore are the business of creating stallions. They don't have to send all their good horses there. The French Derby's recent record, if you look at some of the winners, Sotsass, Mishriff, St. Mark's Basilica, Vedani, Ace Impact, Camille Pizarro last year. I mean, it's building a really strong recent record as a race for, you know, future stallions. And, you know, we all know that the bloodstock market loves speed these days. It's a worry for Epsom. a mile and a half derby going forward, is it going to become sort of gradually the less sexy option of these two races? We would obviously much rather that all of the horses with a serious claim to greatness would just turn up at Epsom. But here, because they've got those two really quality horses, it does very much look as though one of them is going to get diverted to Shaunty instead.
It's funny, isn't it, how we view the Derby. I mean, I thought, you look back to Serpentine, who was gelded, which is an incredible feat for a Derby winner. And you sort of think, is the Derby what it once was? And then you think, well, hang on, we've had Auguste Rodin and City of Troy, two magnificent horses who are, again, earmarked for really promising stud careers, go and win the race. So maybe we're being a little bit premature on that.
I think it can be, absolutely, it can be a stallion-making race, Epsom Derby. In my memory, it's always been the case that you get one or two winners that just aren't going to be remembered in the same breath as horses like those. Not every winner can go on and be a top class stallion. But with the way that the breed is going, we seem to be getting fewer and fewer horses each year that are definitely going to stay a mile and a half in a top class race. So you just wonder, what kind of depth of talent we're going to be getting at Epsom in the future, particularly if people start latching onto the French Derby as a really attractive
alternative. I'll tell you one thing that has surprised me, and I in the last 24 hours, I just can't get my head around it. So obviously I spoke to Aidan, as I said, and the story was on the front page of the Racing Post on Monday and has been online since, 4 o'clock yesterday on Sunday. Now we're filming this, around midday on Monday. Constitution River is still 4.6 on the exchanges, and Benvenuto Cellini is 4.3 at this current time.
Whoa.
When that story came out, I cannot believe that Constitution River has not drifted remarkably for Epsom, because Aidan is the trainer.
I know the lads leaning, wasn't there?
I know the lads are obviously, the Coolmore camp are huge, massive. But he is the trainer.
Sure.
And this is the greatest trainer possibly of all time. He knows what's going on. And he's basically said that Benvenuto Cellini, in his head, right now, 7 days out from the race, is going to France.
But yet,
on Betfair, he is not drifting at all for Epsom.
I think
it's bizarre.
It's one thing to accept that what Aidan's saying is correct and will probably happen, but it's another thing to sort of put your money on it. I mean, who wants to lay a horse as classy as Constitution River at a price like that? And then what you're risking is that, as you say, things can change 2 days from now. Suddenly Aidan's going, we might go to Epsom. You've done your money.
To put it in context, if you're at a Willie Mullins press day before Cheltenham at Cloyd Sutton, and we all hear and joke about the Willie Mullins bingo and various races, but if Willie Mullins said a month out from the Cheltenham Festival that the favour for the Supreme Novice Hurdle was likely to go for the Turners instead, there would be a massive drift, and it would drift out to a massive price. So I'm just scratching my head going, is there people on the machine that obviously know a lot more than we do? I don't know. I just fully expected Benvenuto Cellini to be rock hard 9-4 favourites last night and Constitution River to drift out to maybe double figures. But that hasn't happened, which I thought was strange.
It's going to make for fascinating viewing, isn't it? And also, Royal Ascot betting markets are now really starting to bubble up. The predominant one I'm sort of thinking of at the moment is the St. James's Palace, because we're going to have the rematch between Stard and Boecho, the two winners of the Guineas. And let's just reflect on the Colts Classic at the Curragh on Saturday, DJ. I thought it was a dominant, a real sort of commanding performance from Stard. He's exceeded my expectations this year, considering, he was a very, very good two-year-old, but he didn't quite make the grade in the Dewhurst, and he just seems to have put that behind him. What was your reaction to the win?
Yeah, I think they're getting to know him really well. I thought it was interesting to hear Ryan interviewed afterwards, and it can be hard to get stuff out of Ryan Moore, but Gary O'Brien, he obviously really does respect Gary O'Brien, and Gary gets serious stuff out of him. And I just thought that Ryan talking about Gestad afterwards, he said basically, when you do ask him to quicken, it's not instant. It's not in that stride you might see a field of gold or a horse, where you can see that instant acceleration. it's a kind of a gradual. So he came off. If you actually watched the race again, I was surprised when I watched the replay. He actually came off at almost, I don't know, he certainly wasn't the last off the bridle for a horse that absolutely bolted up by three lengths. He was nudging away at him from that kind of turn into the straight from the tree pole. And it was like this gradual kind of emphaticness that we saw rather than an instant acceleration. And I think that could be key for the St. James's Palace Stakes at Royal Ascot, because I think they know now that if they are to beat Bo Echo, they're going to have to potentially ride him differently to what they did at Newmarket, because he was out there doing his thing. And as Aidan said, like, he was kind of a little bit fresh, a little bit free, first run of the year, there to be shot at, out on his own. And he was beaten fair and square by Bo Echo. There was a long way back to the third. But they're going to have to try something different in order to beat him. And I just think maybe that performance at the Curra taught them a little bit more about him than they knew previously. And it's going to be a hell of a race.
Evens Bo Echo 5-2 Stad.
As a matter of interest, I wrote this in my piece on page 2 on Saturday. I looked up the detailed pronunciation of Gstaad.
Oh my god, I'm going about it wrong, am I? Public dressing down.
You're silencing the G. So does Jerry Hannon. So I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I thought I looked it up and I got.
I kind of give it a flavour of a G without going hard G.
Yeah, it's a slight G.
I'm not hearing the G from you at all.
Maybe it's all in my head. Anyway, regardless, who would you want to be on?
This should be a simple like A or B. I honestly don't know. I just think the dynamic is fascinating because you're going with, you know, George Bowie versus Aidan O'Brien, and I spoke to Matt Williams for the piece on Saturday, and Matt is a hugely successful pro punter and he cannot wait to lay Bo Echo the next time he runs, and he was hoping that would be at the Curra. I just thought it was pretty dominant at Newmarket, so it would be a no bet race for me, but I would probably side with Bo Echo.
Okay, what about you, Chris, trying to keep things snappy?
So the different thing about Ascot is it's round a bend, and you know that can always go wrong, and you're right. For Bo Echo's sake, that's something I'd worry about. I'm a long-time Gstaad fan. It was great to see him finally win a Group 1 in Europe on Saturday there. You know, he fully deserved it. But it was in the back of my mind that he's had 4 previous goes at Group 1s in Europe and come up second every time. Went to America and won at the Breeders' Cup. Obviously, very impressive, but a race he probably should have won. So there was no danger of me taking, what was he, 2s on, night 4 on Saturday.
They were skinny enough.
In a decent race, but he's done it well and great. Be a race that you would absolutely walk through broken glass to see come this in James's Palace Stakes. And there will be other interesting horses in there. Rayef is in there. Maybe Puerto Rico might run. Talk of New York's high in the betting. An absolute highlight. But my instinct is, you know, go with the Newmarket form, because for all that Gstaad might, you know, might have needed the run to some extent, I was watching him through the race and it seemed to me at the time that everything was going perfectly for him. You know, he didn't overrace in the early stages. He was running his race to the full of his ability, and then Bo Echo just shot past him like he was standing still, and they've left everything else for dead. So on the face of it, Bo Echo is just a sort of generational talent. And, you know, are the prices just now even money about him? That surely that's got to be the way to go.
Okay. Interesting. What about Precise? Wow, what a performance yesterday in the Irish 1000 Guineas. As DJ mentioned, Ryan picked True Love, the Newmarket winner, and that form was reversed in spectacular fashion, DJ. You were saying that the vibes were that Ryan was going to ride the ultimate winner earlier on in the week. What do you make of this performance? I mean, she was right back to her best, wasn't she?
Yeah, when I say the vibe, that was completely me guessing. And I get a lot of things wrong in life. I get so much wrong every single day of the week. But I did speak to a few lads and I said, you know, I think you're right. Just completely guessing from Aidan's tone and the questions I asked and various things that he said. I came off that call and I said, Ryan is going to write Precise. And then when the decks came through, I was like, I know nothing. I think Precise has always been in Aidan's head the best of these outstanding three-year-old fillies that he has, Diamond Necklace, obviously, in True Love as well. And I think in Aidan's head, the stuff he's saying, I know we've heard it before, but the stuff he's saying that, you know, we've never had one like her, And she's different, she's unique, she's all these things. And I think in his head, she's always been the best. And she showed that on Sunday. In a funny sort of a race, I'd say if you were on True Love, you were remarkably happy almost. You were kind of worried for maybe half the race. Oh, is he going to get a gap? And then the gap opens and you're like, go away and win now, won't you? And then she didn't. And she was beaten 2.5 lengths at the line. So that's a 7.5 length turnaround from their clash at Newmarket. She goes to the Oaks now, I'd imagine. And
do you think she'll go?
I do, yeah. All week, from speaking to Aidan, it was, you know, the plan is to run in the Curragh and then go on to the Oaks. So I would say that is going to be as big a decision for Ryan as any decision this season, because we know now that Precise is the real deal over a mile. On her, I know on her stride pattern, it mightn't suggest so, but on her breeding, she should potentially get the trip. So does he get off the proven stare who's had the perfect prep at Chester and Amelia Earhart to his favourite to ride Precise? It's
I
just don't see if Precise runs in the Oaks. I just can't see how Ryan Moore doesn't ride her.
Okay.
I just can't see.
Before you carry on, Chris, let's give you the market quickly. So Amelia Earhart at the minute is the 2-1 favourite. Legacy Link at 3s, Precise at 4s. So maybe that's a touch big given how confident DJ was. I wasn't sure that the Oaks was definitely the plan for her. 7's Thundering On. There's some doubt about her participation as well, along with Venetian Lace and Cameo at 12s. Should remember a Irish Guineas double for Star Spangled Banner. And what a
big deal, isn't it? I mean,
could a daughter of the Star Spangled Banner win the Oaks? I find that crazy to think about.
It seems very counterintuitive. And the way she won on Sunday, she looks like a fast horse, doesn't she? I mean,
she doesn't look like a non-stayer either, though.
I mean, another half mile to go. And, you know,
it's a long way.
It might be a very different race at Epsom. I think when you've got a horse that looks as quick as her and you've got the Coronation Stakes sitting there to be won, don't you just go straight to Royal Ascot? Rather than, you know, asking her to go on
another, True Love?
And it's only 12 days between the races as well. She goes for the Oaks because it's Sunday to Friday. And, you know, Aidan's already got the favourite for the Oaks. It would strike me as being slightly out of character, and maybe it indicates a sort of lack of belief in Amelia Earhart if they do decide to go with Precise. Yeah. But I would have thought, you know, when she looks a really strong miler, why not stick to a mile? That would be my expectation of the usual Ballydore way of doing things.
Yeah. As I say, would you drop True Love back in trip maybe?
I wouldn't. No, that wouldn't have been my instinct either. After, I mean, she has won a Newmarket Guineas after all. Yeah. You know, you just happen to have, well, 3 really talented fillies at the trip. So
4 if, you know, Diamond Necklace as well.
But yeah, so I mean, it's surprising to me to hear DJ's sort of really emphatic about Precise going for the Oaks. I mean, it'd be a really interesting thing to happen if she does go, you know, a really sporting thing to try and attempt. Presumably they won't have decided yet because they'll need to see, you know, how she recovers from it. It was a proper race that she had on Sunday. And you need to see how she comes out of that. And is she ready to go again?
Okay.
It's not to be taken lightly, that. And you're coming up against good horses like Legacy Link and Venetian Lace. I mean, that'll be a proper test, that race.
So much great racing that's been and to come, isn't there? And we've still not even touched upon Haydock. We'll try and speed things up a little bit now. The Commonwealth Cup market, well, 5-2 Venetian Sun is the favourite after absolutely mullering her opposition in the Sandy Lane Stakes. Koppel, a late non-runner in that due to drama with the track, which we'll get on in a little bit. Is she the real deal? Is she going to win the Commonwealth Cup? What did you make of the run?
It's really classy. I mean, there was just, she came from back in the field and, you know, there was a sort of few strides and I was like, has she been given a bit too much to do? And then suddenly, you know, she's on their shoulders and back on the bridle. You couldn't help but love it. So yeah, right favourite. But again, Commonwealth Cup, you'd hope will be competitive when we get there. I wouldn't be rushing an anti-post in a race like that.
Okay, DJ, I don't know why I get the spidey senses. You're a big Venetian Sun fan.
Yeah. This is my T-shirt, is it? I think she's got every chance, and she deserves to be favourite. I've said for months, and I'm sticking to it for hook or by crook, I think, and I've said all season, that Wise Approach will win the Commonwealth Cup. I thought there were more positives than negatives, certainly from his first run back at Ascot, where he was caught in the wrong part of the track last time. He did disappoint me a little bit at Newbury, but again, I don't think the race panned out the way it would have suited for him. He was on the wing again, and I think it just smacks up, even the drift the first day and everything about Wise approach just seems that it's been built towards one day and one day only. He's 16-1 for the Commonwealth Cup. I still think he's got a massive chance.
Charlie Appleby have had a tough time at Royal Ascot the last couple of years, hasn't he? So that'll be interesting to see how Wise Approach gets on. More sprinting action. We had the Temple Stakes, which was won by Knight Raider. Also in there was American Affair, several others. But it's the Aussies who dominate the market for the King Charles III Stakes. Overpass at 5, Jolly Star 6, 8 Treyev, Catenz Knight Raider, 12 American Affair, 14 Mission Central. Chris, would you have an early fancy for the King Charles III?
I mean, American Affair, that was, you know,
love pretty, him. Yeah.
Pretty good run, wasn't it, all things considered? And, you know, Knight Raider's got that issue of having been disappointing Ascot in the past, I think. So, you know, American Affair wasn't seen after winning last year, but, you know, goes back there, I think, with every chance. And, you know, a rare Scottish winner at Royal Ascot. I think the last one was like 2009 in the Wokingham. So I was really delighted for Jim Goldie to win that race last year. And, you know, he's got every chance of doing it again.
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting ride on Saturday. He was quite prominent. I think American Affair, he's a strong traveller. He likes Mick to chase. And I wonder whether he was sort of in amongst it a bit too soon. And obviously, he's still going to be getting fitter and fitter all the time after such a long time.
That may have been in their minds, you know, let's make sure he's in the heat of battle and the race will take him forward, you know.
I really like him too. DJ, any observations to add?
No, but our Miss Michael Parkinson here today. I know you're absolutely mad on American Affair. You've been, in fairness to Maddie, right? She's kept very quiet. We spoke about 3 weeks ago, and we were chatting about Royal Ascot and different things, and Epsom and the classics. And the two horses Maddie gave to me were,
I don't even remember this.
American Affair is a massive price for the King Charles or King Stab, whatever it is now at Ascot, like 33-1 or 25-1. I think it drifted out after that race. And the other one was Thundering On in the Oaks. You were like,
Don't know if she's going to go, though.
25-1, I think she'll go, yeah. 25-1. So, in fairness to Maddie, you've been keeping very quiet, which I wouldn't do if I were you.
It's because I was back to either of them, DJ.
Yeah, but still, you get credit in the bank for mentioning.
Yes. Well, a horse like American Affair, you probably, I mean, I'd still take 12-1 now.
I think it's a good price.
Anyway, gents.
We'll be time enough for boasting after he's won, right?
I hope so. It happened last year, didn't it, DJ, on Good Morning Royal Ascot? Just saying.
Yeah. We know a good Maddie boast.
The evidence is there for all to see. Prince of Wales Stakes has a really strong favourite now, 11-8 Darius, after his awesome performance the other day. 3-1 Ombudsman, 7's Forever Young, 8 Calandagan, 10 Al Makam, who won the Tattersalls Gold Cup, and 16 now Mini Hawk, who was desperately disappointing in that race. Quick reaction, DJ. Mini Hawk, to me, it looked like there could be something amiss. I mean, that was a long way beyond what we expect from her, but very good from Al Makam, nevertheless.
Yeah, absolutely. And the time was astonishing as well. It was a fantastic time, and everything about Al Makam, Ed Walker, even afterwards when he's interviewed, he goes, people are sick of me talking about this horse. So it's great to see him actually producing what he knew he was capable of. And Mini Hawk, I'd say the race, just the way it panned out, definitely didn't suit. It was a bit stop-start. And as Aidan said afterwards, she's a proper, you know, needs a seriously strong pace over a mile and a quarter. She's basically a mile and a half filly running over a mile and a quarter. So it'd be interesting to see. He said just put a line through that. That wasn't her, but you would be worried. I don't fancy Darius for this. And I think on his day, Ombudsman is unbeatable over a mile and a quarter in a race like this at Ascot. I think 3-1 is astonishing value. This is an incredibly talented horse who won the race last year despite being stopped in his run. He shouldn't have been able to win last year. He shouldn't. It really, you know, when you get stopped like that when you're making your first effort to come back and quicken again, I thought was an astonishing performance. He's obviously had that run in Maidan where, you know, he was emphatic enough there that day. It says like he's going to go to Sandown. There's no way Ombudsman is going to be 3-1 on the day if things go according to plan between now and then. I think we saw in the Judmont International last year at York that this is top of the pops, this horse. And over a mile and two at Ascot on quick ground, I will be all over Ombudsman to beat Darius.
I love it, because when you've got DJ on these shows, it's just Sam, producer Sam's going to be like, we'll clip up every section because it's just social media.
It's
immediately
wrong, so.
That's a nice, strong opinion.
Yes, we love to see them.
He's agree.
Well, I was just thinking the Prince of Wales last year was a really strong pace, wasn't it? I mean, that's helped Ombudsman as the sort of last challenger to some extent. He's really talented. But he's going to be running, we think, on Thursday in the Brigadier Gerard. I wouldn't be tempted by 3-1 for the Prince of Wales when it looks like being so strong. That was a great run from Al-Makam, who beat Ombudsman last year about this time. Sadad ran a big race as well, considering he was probably for half the race, he was out the back. He wasn't where you wanted to be over this weekend. You needed to be up with the pace. Minnie Hawk, DJ, can I try this on you? I wonder, I know she's won on fast ground in the past, but I just wondered, she looked a bit like she wasn't entirely comfortable
that
on that
my
drying surface.
Exact reaction as well, Chris. Yeah, I don't know whether she looked comfortable.
Yeah, I agree. I just think when you watched the Arc last year on that ground, she floated across the ground at Longchamp that day. And you just looked yesterday and you just go, oh, I don't know if she's in love with this. And it's going to be it's amazing. I always think.
She didn't love that. I know it was late on in the season, but Breeders' Cup turf
exactly
as well.
Exactly the same, yeah.
I'm going to put the absolute markers on this now, but I worked at Ascot for the last, I don't know, decade. It never rains that week. Like we've had, there's one or two days that you can remember. But since COVID, so you're talking 20, 25, 4, 3, 2, in the last 4 years, so that's 20 days in a row at Ascot it hasn't rained. That week just seems 30-something degrees, glorious sunshine, and never rains that week. So it's going to be rattling quick for the Prince of Wales.
Come on,
so,
man. If it's hammering down that week now, it's your fault.
Yeah, definitely.
No, it never rains in Ascot. Never rains.
We have had some proper wet Ascots in my memory.
Not in recent years.
All those poor folk out in the Windsor enclosure getting drenched with no cover, it really takes the edge off it. So, DJ,
you're public enemy number one.
I don't think it has rained a single day at Royal Ascot since COVID.
All right.
I said that correctly, but I don't think it has.
That's quite a double, isn't it? Ombudsman for the Prince of Wales and no rain during Ascot. It's a big shout.
Okay. Onwards, or rather backwards, to Haydock and their drain issue. There seems to be a running theme this season with ground issues. Even last jump season, obviously, Cheltenham had their issue on trials day. But Friendly Soul in the first race on Saturday stumbled 2.5 furlongs out. They had a look at the track afterwards and deemed that the 3 remaining sprint races had to be moved to the inner track as they investigate a significant drainage issue. And there's also going to be an inspection at 1 p.m. tomorrow, that's Tuesday, to determine whether that inner track will be able to take the brunt of racing on Friday and Saturday. The feature on Saturday is the Group 3 Leicester Piggott Filly Stakes. It was won last year by Lestrange. Chris, I spoke to Andrew Cooper, who's clerk of the course at Sandown and Epsom, about this yesterday. And I was saying, is there any connection we can make between these issues? And he was basically saying, no, I don't think you can. And by their nature, they are obviously all different. Each race course drainage setup is going to be different. For instance, he explained how Sandown has loads of drainage systems, particularly in the home straight, whereas Epsom obviously wouldn't have any at all. And each track is so different. The weather conditions we're dealing are different. He did say about how if you have a very wet period followed by a very dry period, that can sort of create issues with drains, but not to the extent that he thought that would have been any sort of reason for this happening at Haydock. Obviously, racegoers are going to be feeling shortchanged by this because they've, paid to see a full card, and the conditions for punters as well have changed dramatically in Haydock's case from one track to the other.
I mean, they were really lucky at Haydock, weren't they, that there are 2 big races on Saturday just happened to be sprint races that you can do in the straight course.
I mean, I spoke to Henry Dwyer yesterday and he sort of said, I think S4 hated that. And I think it really made a big difference because wants it like a road. She wants the rainless Royal Ascot that DJ's talking about it to be like a bowling green. And instead she was racing on ground that was a bit more cut up. So, this is a subject that you're quite passionate about, and
I wouldn't have said passionate, but it is, it's gripping, isn't it?
It is.
You can see
it's not good enough, is it?
From the letters that we're getting, a lot of people are very exercised about this. for punters, you know, there's a lot of punters out there who hate the whole thing about watering, and particularly they talk about overwatering. You get unexpected going conditions and, you know, surprise results, which a lot of punters are, you know, very happy to blame on what the Clarke, of course, has been doing with his watering can. And I mean, that has been an issue for punters for as long as I've been a racing journalist. I remember about 20 years ago, I wrote on this subject for a different paper, and the postbag I got in response was enormous. You know, for a lot of guys who've been betting on racing for a long time, their instinct is, you know, just leave the ground alone, and can't we have just what nature provides? You know, they remember lots of races in the 80s that were run on rattling quick ground, and there were some horses that really needed that and would perform to a very high standard on it. You know, I think the ability to water that we have these days, you know, is beneficial. It can help us to produce ground that, you know, is less challenging for a lot of these horses, and that's just the world that we live in now. Clarks are going to do it. The trainers seem to be perfectly comfortable with it for the most part. Is it connected to what we've seen with the sort of cluster of?
I mean, they are all. Chester, for instance, seemed, you know, purely ground issue. Cheltenham was a drainage hole. This appears to be a drainage hole.
Cheltenham and Haydock seem to be the same issue, but at different times
of
the year.
Instance Goodwood, I mean, that was just due to, you know, very, very quick ground followed by
had a lot of rain before. And then slipping. Yes,
yeah,
that can happen.
They all seem independent. So,
but then, you know, they had problems at Brighton as well, didn't they, with the leather jackets and then the nematodes that basically wiped out their spring, and they're just going to they're going to be racing on Friday, thankfully. But that's going to be their first fixture of the year. So, I mean, I think people very naturally put all these things together and say, well, this is a whole lot of racing that's been interrupted. That in former years we could just rely on it would happen. You know, what's different now? Why can't we just produce going that people can be confident
about?
They'd
love a bit of British politics, wouldn't they?
I mean, you know, yeah, I think it's perfectly natural for the audience to sort of throw their hands up in despair when you get a few of these things. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's anything more than just bad luck and to some extent a coincidence. Mm-hmm. But it does also show the fundamental importance for all race courses and race course groups to invest in producing their track in the best condition it can possibly be. You know, that's not an area where it's appropriate to cut corners. And, you know, so it was interesting at the same time over the weekend to read that Katie Margeson isn't taking up a post as clerk of the course at Huntingdon because she was told that it was only going to be offered as a part-time position and she wants full-time employment. So she's going to see what alternatives she could find elsewhere. That slightly bothered me in the current circumstances. You want to be assured that all racecourses are investing seriously in their turf,
literally in their grassroots. Yeah,
well, exactly. So well put. That's why you get the big dollars. It's just not an area where we want to see money being saved. I appreciate that, you know, we are going through a difficult time financially and people are bound to sort of pinch every penny. But it's so important.
Has there been any issues in Ireland of this nature, DJ? I can't think of any recent sort of examples that stand out.
I just remember after the Cheltenham issue back in January, I remember somebody saying the Punchestown years and years ago, there was big uproar at the festival, I think. But it is remarkable how all these instances are happening very close together. It's utterly bizarre. Like, I was of the opinion, it's funny how you kind of change your mind on these things. I thought at the time, and I hold my hands up here, I thought there was a complete overreaction to the Cheltenham one in January. And I was like, I don't know if I was on one of these shows, but I was certainly probably quoted publicly as saying that I thought it was a big overreaction and it was just a hole. And if it was in Ireland, we'd just put up a rail around it and there wouldn't even be a word said about it kind of thing. And now you're kind of going, actually, the people who were concerned about it at the time, i.e. the Lydia Hislops of this world, who I thought was a little bit over the top at the time, she was right and I was wrong. So sometimes in this game, you have to hold your hands up and say your initial reaction might have been wrong. And certainly in that Cheltenham case, my initial reaction was wrong. And I'd say a lot of these tracks are, I'd say they're even putting on a braver face than the real face, because I'd say a lot of these tracks are a little bit worried about the condition at the moment, be it Cheltenham, be it Haydock, be it these various places. And it's going to be a big year, like, for our tracks and trying to get this issue sorted, because if this keeps continuing, it's another thing we can add to the endless list of things we need to sort in the sport.
I'll give you another one, shall I? Equine flu cases are on the rise. The decision was made to cancel the Hunter Chase sort of card, the remaining fixtures, on Monday. The BHA, by doing that, are hoping to sort of reduce the cross-contamination between licensed yards and other sort of equine facilities. Charlie Longston closed his gallops for public use this week just to try and keep a lid on it. And, you know, in order to sort of remember what a threat this can be to the sport, we should go back to 2019 in February, when a lot of the yards across the country went into total shutdown and there was no racing in Britain for 6 days. So obviously this is something that the BHA are on. James Given, there, one of the senior figures, saying that the sales are super spreader events for this kind of thing. Chris, it clearly a worrying sort of time. We've got to make sure it doesn't grab hold. Are you happy with how it's been dealt with so far?
So I would lack the expertise to give a proper view on that. It's just really concerning when you hear James Given say that the equine flu in the wider horse population in Britain is spread a lot further than it was in 2019. I mean, it's something like twice as many counties in Britain have had a case this time as had a case in those days. And so, you know, to some extent, you could say we're lucky not to have had an interruption already. There was one day lost at Plumpton because there was a case near.
Yes, they called off their card because of a case in a nearby.
Yeah, there was a horse who actually is shedding the virus. So we've kind of dodged a bullet so far. But that needs to keep happening because, you know, we've got the Derby coming up, a week on Saturday, 2 weeks after that Royal Ascot. You know, because you sort of think, well, if we lost 6 days in 2019 and it's much more widespread now, if you get a stoppage now, you'd have to be worried that we might not be coming back a week later. You know, it might be a couple of weeks off just before we could be sure that it's going to be safe to go again. There's just no room in this packed summer calendar for an interruption of that kind of scale. You know, it's really going to cause a pile up of fixtures and classy races and people wanting to run their good horses for big prize money. So it's a real, real issue. And, you know, I can quite understand why the BHA have taken the measures that they have done. And, you know, let's hope, for goodness sake, that they're effective and we can keep on going.
Yeah, I guess my line of questioning was because a lot of the people from the sort of the Hunter Chase point-to-point community were, you know,
they're bound to be annoyed.
Yeah, they had
a tough time already with losing the Cheltenham fixture because of the drainage issue that we talked about already. So I can understand why they're upset, but, you know, I would back the BHA from my low position of knowledge. You know, I quite understand why they've taken that.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think about what's at risk in terms of the broader sport, if there were to be a general stoppage right now, you know, the cost last time was, what, 3 or 4 million quid, and it'd be a lot more than that this time.
Keep tabs on the Racing Post website and app for all the latest on equine flu, on all the horses and their targets going forward to this key time in the season. Final talking point I want to give some attention to, Chris, is affordability. In that there was a major gambling commission meeting on Thursday and plans to implement the affordability checks were shelved for now.
Shelved might be overstating it. I mean, that was the board meeting at which we sort of expected they were going to drop the hammer on us and say, this is happening, you know, and you've just got to put up with it.
Yeah.
And they didn't say that.
No.
Which is interesting.
And some statements were referencing the pilot that, you know, we've spoken about for months and months and months on this show, and how these sort of affordability checks aren't what they seem, and the damage to the sport will be catastrophic. But we don't have a timetable as to what's going to happen next and when they may be implemented.
I mean, it seems that literally everybody is in a kind of limbo just now, waiting to see what's decided. There's still got to be hope, right? That, you know, maybe there'll be some, we'll get a reprieve here. You know, people will come to their senses. This Gambling Commission board, which features people who have very little experience of the gambling industry, will hesitate at the edge of the cliff.
Well, I was asking you that before we came in here. Did you think that, you know, some of the sort of support that's been given to, I guess, gamblers, responsible gamblers, and wanting to, the Racing Post itself, the work we've done to try and sort of oppose these checks, do you think that's had an impact?
Well, you would like to imagine it must have done. I mean, you know, it could not have been made more clear over the last few months. The damage that affordability checks are going to cause, and in exchange for what? You know, is it going to afford, you know, the kind of protection that obviously some people would like to see for problem gamblers? You know, if people are forced towards the black market, then it's just a disaster. It's the wrong tool for the wrong job. And, you know, they've been well warned about the catastrophic potential consequences of pulling this particular trigger. So it was pleasing and interesting to see that they weren't prepared to pull it on Thursday. And maybe they can be persuaded that, in fact, this whole thing is something that needs to go back to Parliament for further consideration and different decisions about what's the best way forward.
Indeed. Very nicely wrapped up. It's been a jam-packed show full of news and views. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks to Chris and to DJ in Ireland as well for their time. We'll see you again in a week's time. Bye-bye.